Good morning. It's Tech Update Monday on the Larry Mueller Show, and I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Larry today. He returns tomorrow. And our guest today is Beth D'Angelo, a senior IT specialist with UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. With over 20 years of experience, she's here to answer your tech and electronics questions today. So whether it's your printer, your laptop, or your smartphone, or any combination of these, if you've got a question for Beth, we invite you to join our conversation. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to the show. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. And Beth, welcome back to the Larry Mueller Show.
Good morning, Lee. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I want to start with your 20 years of experience in IT and ask you how IT departments like yours at the UW-Madison have planned for and are adapting to the new tariffs that seem to be affecting or threatening to affect the cost of electronics.
Well, really, it's hard to plan for much right now because things have been in such flux. So I think that's really been main part of the issue is it's hard to set targets when the goalposts keep moving. So it's really hard to make any long-range plans for what costs are going to look like and also what funding is going to look like. So, you know, in my organization, we're making sure we're keeping our services running as optimally as possible. We're not changing our operational conditions, trying to operate as business as usual within kind of an ever-changing landscape.
What about short-term needs for IT departments when computers go bad and you need to get something new? Are you looking for new computers to refurbish old ones? What's the short-term strategy to deal with this uncertainty?
Yeah, I think at a more personal level or at a, you know, thinking in a small business sense or, for the consumers out there, there is a lot of consternation around how are we going to replace aging equipment with prices being very unpredictable. And I think there are a couple of different avenues that groups can take that can help either stabilize those costs or at least replace equipment with something a little bit newer that might, you know, maybe not be the latest and greatest, but will meet needs. So I think people are going to need to be a bit more deliberate in their purchasing decisions around technology.
And what do we know about tech companies, the big ones like Apple or computer chip maker NVIDIA, Microsoft? How are they planning for and adapting to the new tariffs and the impact on their business?
Well, I think that's, been the big question. Because things have changed so fluidly, it's hard to know what the roadmaps of those organizations look like day to day as they're adjusting to meet, what comes from our government. So I think prices are obviously going to increase on the consumer side. And I think that is where most tech companies are battening down the hatches on where they're spending money right now, where they're spending resources, because I think they're probably anticipating having to pass on a large amount of that tariff cost to consumers. So I think we've seen a lot of hiring freezes across tech companies, either streamlining their workforces or, not trying to grow right now to try to minimize costs.
Saw this story in Reuters who cite multiple sources that report that Apple chartered cargo flights to import an estimated 600 tons of iPhones, what amounts to about 1.5 million iPhones, they say, from India in an effort to beat President Trump's tariffs. Is this a strategy that can be used going forward, or is this just part of the uncertainty that people have tried to work around?
A lot of this seems like very last ditch or kind of a desperate efforts to pad stock within U.S. borders before those tariffs hit. So anything brought in after those tariffs take place, will come at a much steeper cost. So trying to beat some of those deadlines and backfill for having a larger stock on hand within the U.S. To sell can keep prices lower for a time. But it really all depends on, you know, how those tariffs change over the next several months and how the economy responds to that, whether or not that is going to be any kind of long-term strategy.
Yeah, Beth, we started with looking at what IT departments can do and have planned for. We've taken a look at what big U.S. tech companies like Apple or Microsoft can do and have planned for. So with that in mind, what does that mean for me, the consumer, when it comes to cell phones, computers, tablets, TVs, home appliances, smartwatches, headphones, and components for any of these?
Yeah, I think it may look like people scaling back their expectations for buying the newest version of whatever it is within the tech realm that they are looking to purchase. I think folks are going to be looking more towards the refurbished market for models that are maybe a couple of years old, used products that have been refurbished by organizations that, you know, give some warranty to those products after you purchase them. Going to aftermarket sites like Facebook Marketplace, eBay, Craigslist, and looking for secondhand equipment to, you know, replace what may not be working anymore. Also kind of upgrading what they already have, you know, within those systems with newer components rather than buying new systems entirely.
It's interesting because I see that the new iPhone 17 is about ready to be announced or released. And at the same time, USB Financial has estimated that the cost of an iPhone could increase by an estimated $700 with the proposed tariffs, depending on where they land. So with that in mind, what's the smartest strategy for me to go about finding something refurbished that I can count on or would be worth my investment?
Yeah, absolutely. And I highly recommend thinking about going at least a model back from the latest edition that's released by companies like Apple or Samsung. You're going to save a lot of money. And the feature differences from one model year to the next are generally not that great that most consumers would need, you know, to go out and get the iPhone 17. The iPhone 16, the cost of that generally will drop considerably once the new version is released. But if you're looking for something that was, you know, maybe refurbished, had been used, or is an earlier model, there are a couple of sites that, you know, come highly recommended. One especially that I like is called Backmarket. It's B-A-C-K Market, backmarket.com. They have verified refurbished equipment, smartphones, laptops, tablets, anything you could really need for personal electronic needs.
Yeah, I got a certified refurbished laptop from Newegg that I've been pretty satisfied with and wouldn't know it wasn't new if they didn't tell me when I purchased it.
Yeah, Newegg is a company I've been buying computer equipment from for 25 years. very well regarded. That said, I've also been buying computer equipment off of eBay for 25 years.
Is that safe? Is that reliable?
It is, as long as you vet the sellers. So what you're going to want to do is take a look at the seller ratings. You want to look at their reviews. You want to see, you know, if you're buying, say, you want an iPad and you're buying from a seller on eBay, see how many of that specific iPad they've already sold. Take a look at the reviews of those specific models that they're selling and look at what people are saying about that seller. If their reviews are, you know, 99% positive, that's somebody I think I can trust.
Beth D'Angelo, our guest, senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, for your Tech Update Monday and answers to your electronics questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, talk@WPR.org. We'll go to Jerry in Kaukauna now. Jerry, good morning.
Yes, Beth, I got a question here. Here's what I got going on. I have an older desktop. I just love it. It fulfills my needs. It's not very fast or anything, but I got slow DSL anyway, and I just do research on it and listen to music, that type of stuff. But it only runs Windows 10. My concern is security. Is that going to be an issue down the road? And is there a way that I can, I know a computer person, he might be able to put parts in it and I could keep my same shell and stuff. Is that Is that something viable?
That's a great question, Jerry, because I know there's still a lot of Windows 10 operating systems out there, and I know because of some of, at least I think I do, Beth, you can correct me if I'm wrong, some of the hardware in the older computers would prevent an upgrade to Windows 11, and whether or not that would create some sort of security threat for these old operating systems.
Yeah, that is correct, Lee. So the policy from Microsoft, they have the life cycle of their operating systems. When an operating system comes to end of life, we call it the EOL date. That is set for October 14th of 2025. So that's fast approaching. There are a lot of machines out there that are likely not compatible with Windows 11 with the upgraded version. If it's an older machine, it may not have parts within it that can run that newer operating system. There are ways of checking that out. If you go out to Microsoft's website, you can actually look up the model of computer you have if it's a kind of a common manufacturer and find out if that model is compatible with Windows 11. If it is, it is a free upgrade to go from Windows 10 to 11, so you don't have to pay money for that new software. But you know, if you're not familiar with upgrading your operating system, you may want to check in with that friend that you have that knows a little bit more to help you with it. If there is an incompatibility with your system, it's likely something like the motherboard of your computer that wouldn't be able to run the version of the operating system within Windows 11. And replacing that really means replacing all of the components within the computer. So you're kind of looking at not really worth it. And as far as what you're going to miss out on is, as of that end of life date on October 14th, Microsoft is no longer going to provide security updates for that software. So newer security fixes that Microsoft develops won't be available for that operating system. So it could leave some security holes for you.
Jerry, I appreciate the call. And Jerry raised another great point, and it's something I've seen with my parents' computers, and then actually most people's computers, that do you really need the latest, the greatest, the fastest CPU and the most expensive GPU with what most people use their computers for? I would think that you could really get a basic system at an affordable price, even with the tariffs in place, for what most people use it for.
Yeah, I think that people often will overbuy on technology, thinking that because a lot of the larger tech companies have releases on an annual cycle where there's a new version every year, and they build in, features and updates and may have some fancy new doodads and literary things for people to look at, but it's not really necessarily something that you need. And I think a lot of us out in the consumer world don't use most of the potential of the devices that we have already. So, my iPhone that I'm talking to you on right now is 5 years old.
Senior IT specialist Beth D'Angelo with a 5-year-old iPhone, and it does everything you need to do, right?
Exactly. I haven't needed to upgrade it. It works just fine. I'd like a little more battery life, but other than that, it still works. So why go out and spend $1,000 on another iPhone to do what I can already do with what I have?
And have a couple extra hours in the battery to boot.
Right, exactly. So, I think people are just going to have to be a little bit more deliberate about those choices moving forward with prices being so volatile.
And that might not be a bad thing. Our guest is Beth D'Angelo, Senior IT Specialist with UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, here with our Tech Update Monday. We're taking a look at what consumers can do in the face of uncertainty with a moving target of tariffs and the electronics imports that many of us rely on just to get through our day at work or on our cell phone. And if you've got a tech question today or electronics question that Beth can help answer, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send us an email, talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to WPR News. Hey, stay with us after noon today as we get an introduction to quantum computing. If you thought artificial intelligence was the next big thing, the next big thing may be quantum computing and what it can do. We'll get a simple explainer in a way that'll help me understand it a little bit. And then after 12:30 today, we'll move from the not-so-distant future into our rich and varied past in Wisconsin with the latest additions to the State Register of Historic Places. All around Wisconsin, we'll give you the tour, but right now, it's your Tech Update Monday with Beth D'Angelo, Senior IT Specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, answering your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, and we'll go to Mary in Oshkosh next. Mary, good morning.
Good morning. I just tuned in, and I heard you talking about Windows 11 and needing to find out if your PC was compatible. And I had a laptop that I found out months and months ago that was not compatible. Windows was rejecting it as an upgrade, being upgradable. But I found an article on PCMag.com mm-hmm. about exploring. They gave some helpful information on seeing whether incompatible PCs actually had the technology to run Windows 11, and found out that my Acer laptop indeed would be able to run Windows 11. And then the magazine also gave some gave instructions as to how to update the register to get by Windows 11 refusing to load. And I followed those directions and got Windows 11 installed on my laptop, and it's working just fine.
Wow. That is pretty technologically savvy, Mary. I am grateful for the update. PC Magazine, PCMag.com. Are there computers that you know of, Beth, that could be operating Windows 11, even if Microsoft says they're not compatible?
Well, that sounds like a really nice hack. So, Mary, way to get around the barriers. I like it. Obviously, Microsoft is going to build some fail-safes into its software that will detect things that tells it whether or not it wants to install on your machine. PCMag, in my opinion, is a very trusted source. I've been using them as a source for tech information for many, many years. But just as a kind of an overview, here's a list of the hardware requirements for Windows 11 so folks know. You need to have at least 4 gigs of memory or RAM in your computer. You need 64 gigabytes of available storage. You need to have an officially approved processor. So that's where that checker comes in when you're running the update and it tells you whether or not you're compatible. This is probably where that PCMag hack comes in, is some way around that approved processor. And then the other thing that is required is you need to have a graphics processor that's compatible with DirectX 12. So it's something for your video card, essentially, needs to be a certain level. So those are really the 4 things you need to make sure of. Beyond that, there may be ways around it, none that I can really officially say anything about. I haven't tried them.
That makes sense. We'll go to Felix in Madison next. Good morning, Felix.
Hi.
What do you have for us?
Are you leaving?
Yep.
Hey there. I just want to go ahead and piggyback off the consecutive discussion about upgrading. It seems like a lot of it revolves around the operating system, and I happen to have a background in Linux-based operating systems going back like 20 years or so. And every time, I'm usually like all my friends and family's tech support, right? So. Anytime anyone asks me to help them out with an upgrade or whatever, I look at their system and I generally ask them like what they do and so forth. And kind of like that first caller, he's just a general user, looks at the internet, listen to music and stuff.
Right.
In that case, I would say, hey, go ahead and look at a Linux-based operating system. And the hardware requirements for Linux-based operating systems are compatible pretty much with all. There's not. It's hard to find stuff that it's not compatible with. The only kind of challenge there is with that is the someone would have to maybe change a little bit of what they do, possibly find alternatives to the software that they use.
Sure.
Or find a friend or in their family or something.
They would need a Felix.
Might know a little bit about it.
Yeah, they would need somebody like you who has a little experience in Linux. And you make a great point, because I think all of us consider that when we're using a computer, the operating system, the actual, you know, the language that it uses to interpret everything from the internet to the software is generally, if it's a PC, it's Microsoft, and if it's a Apple, it's a Mac OS operating system. But there are other operating systems out there, and probably number three on the list, Beth, would be Linux, which I'm sure you've used in the IT department, but may be difficult for my parents to adapt to.
Felix, a whole lot of folks that I work with would also agree with you mm-hmm. that they feel that Linux is a superior operating system to all others. And I've worked with Linux a bit, and there are many flavors of it out there in the world. It is generally an open source operating system, which means a lot of versions of it are not owned by a corporation. They may be built by crowdsourcing or organizations that come together to develop an operating system for the commons. I think really just the adjustment period of getting used to a different environment. I think it would be really similar to going from being used to using an iPhone all the time to then going to use an Android as far as the learning curve.
That the,
things will
the,
look similar, but might not be in exactly the same place.
The user interface, the way we interact with it, would take some different behaviors and some different methods. But it, ultimately, this computer language that everything else is built on would pretty much do the same thing, Beth?
Yeah. I mean, you may be limited in the software that you have the ability to use. I think that Felix mentioned that. Some of the major software vendors don't develop for Linux. Some do. Certainly finding some compatibility issues, but you also are probably at far less risk of viruses and malware if you're using a Linux operating system, because there are far fewer of those developed for those types of OSs.
Very interesting. And Felix, I appreciate the perspective, because again, most of us just think in terms of an Apple operating system or a Microsoft operating system, but there are more out there if you feel like going a little deeper into what a computer can do. Thank you so much for the call. We'll go to Laura in Manitowoc next. Good morning, Laura.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a student who's going to be starting at UW-Madison in the fall. And he had a sister that went to college. We went for her computer needs. We just went to Apple and bought what she liked. But given the tariffs and, the increased cost, whatnot, I'm wondering if your expert could make a recommendation for incoming students in the fall. He's not studying anything super STEM related or super creative, so he just needs a computer that'll get him through college. Can you make a specific recommendation as to what he should get and where he should get it, whether at UW or from the manufacturer itself?
Now, before I let Beth answer, do you want your incoming college student to be able to play video games on this and other things beyond school?
Well, of course he would say yes.
That might be two different answers then, depending.
But I mean, if it's going to be, I guess we have to weigh that out. If it's going to be exponentially more expensive to pay for the video game playing, I guess I would say no. Maybe she could give a recommendation for one and the other.
Thank you so much for the call, Laura. And the reason I bring this up is one of the impacts we've seen short term, at least, on the shifting tariffs on imported electronics is a video game system known as the Nintendo Switch 2, which was supposed to be out later this year, has now delayed their pre-orders as they wait to see what their price point may be. So it does become part of the story of the tariffs and what consumers should be looking for. Beth, what advice would you give for an incoming college student?
Yeah, so we no longer have a physical tech store on campus at UW-Madison, but through the university bookstore, we do have a purchasing program that allows UW students to buy at student pricing from major manufacturers. So they do sell Apple products. They sell Dell products. So if you're looking for laptops, they have student pricing that's pretty stable for those types of machines. So if you are looking for something that, you know, your kiddo wants to be able to do some gaming on, and it's not just a, I want to be able to do email, and I want to be able to write papers, and I want to be able to use the internet. If that were the case, if it was really just email, internet, and no gaming, I would suggest something like a Chromebook. That's definitely going to be a lower price point than a full-on laptop, and would likely meet all the needs your student would have. But also, it's not going to allow them to do a lot of the gaming that they might be interested in. So if a full-on laptop is of interest, I would suggest looking at that purchasing program through the university bookstore.
And a Chromebook would be a simple task-related computer, and that's another operating system entirely. Is there any concerns about Chromebooks becoming obsolete as they develop?
No, actually, I think Chromebooks are pretty well here to stay. Schools K through 12 have invested really heavily in Chromebook technology for distributed IT for their schools, and I think you know, there was a phase where iPads were, you know, one possibility, but it seems that Chromebooks have really taken the majority of that market. So I think Chromebooks are really here to stay in the low-end, kind of low-cost, task-based machines.
I have a follow-up question that I will ask on behalf of Laura and her incoming college student. When's the best time, do you think, considering the moving target of tariffs and the import of electronics into the United States, when's the best time for an incoming student to buy that laptop or that Chromebook? Would it be right now as we speak? Would it be sit and wait? Or would it be any point in between this and the next school year?
I would say over the last couple of weeks, our prices, as far as what we're selling with at student rates, haven't really changed. Uh-huh. So I think purchasing sooner rather than later might be a safe bet. It's hard, like I said, to anticipate what prices are going to look like anywhere in the further out future because it's such a moving target. But I would say if you are set on purchasing new and you know what you want, I wouldn't wait to buy it because I don't think things are going to get less expensive than they are right now.
Laura, thank you so much for the call and best of luck to your incoming college student. Beth D'Angelo, our guest, senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. With over 20 years of IT experience, she's here to answer your questions for the rest of this hour at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk at WPR.org. And Beth, we have an email here from Jim who asked if they get a new computer to run Windows 11, could they still run their old computer offline? And would that be safe? Will the programs run without an internet connection?
It really depends on what programs are installed on it. Some software requires an internet connection for you to actually open it because it is a subscription-based service that needs internet access in order to validate your license. So it really depends on what you're trying to run on that offline computer. But that's really the main worry with, you know, using an older operating system that is at end of life is you're just not getting security updates. So if it's not connected to the internet, you don't have to worry about unless you're, you know, plugging a lot of different devices into it that may have malware or viruses on them. Usually it's a safer bet if those are not connected to the online world.
I one of the things that keeps coming up for me with this discussion, Beth, is how can I make my computer last longer? And I remember having problems with my old computer and taking it into a tech for service, and they opened it up, and a cat's worth of hair came out of there. And I thought, well, that would be a simple way to make sure my computer lasted longer is to keep my cat out from under there. What are the basic maintenance things that you can think of off the top of your head that may maintain our computers a little bit longer? And for that matter, our cell phones, laptops, and iPads.
Yeah, I mean, certainly from a physical perspective in making that hardware last longer, you know, making sure that the area that if you have a tower PC that tower is in is clean, dusted, you know, make sure there isn't an inordinate amount of cat fur or dust that's getting in that area. If it is, you can slide the case open of your tower and use one of those air dusters to clean it out. Mm-hmm. That's something that can be done, you know, frequently to ensure that you don't get that buildup. Also, shutting the machine off on a regular basis means those fans running. You're not having those parts constantly moving within that tower. So shutting it down when you're not using it is always a good habit to get into. Making sure you're getting security updates to your machine regularly, or if we're talking about a cell phone or a tablet, updating to the latest version of the OS that is available for that piece of equipment is always going to be helpful. Ensuring that you have some virus protection or malware protection on that device, whether that's a subscription service or there's a, something I've spoken about on the show many times called Malwarebytes, which is a software that you can use for free to scan your system to find out if there's anything on there that you don't want on there and take care of those issues. There's also updates you can pay for from Malwarebytes to get the latest and greatest versions of it if you want the paid version. So there, you know, it's like doing oil changes on your car.
It just makes it last longer. I had heard that with Microsoft's antivirus and security systems, that should be enough for most Microsoft operating systems. But you're recommending at least one third-party antivirus or malware search device that could help ferret out others?
Yes, absolutely. So Microsoft is putting out security updates for Microsoft software.
Okay.
It's scanning for the Microsoft products that are on your machine, but it is not looking at viruses or malware that may be developed for other programs that are running on your machine. So having a third-party product that is scanning everything, I think, is really critical to maintaining a safe system.
And we have an update here. Mary from Oshkosh called earlier and talked about an article from PC Magazine that she found that allowed her to upgrade from Windows 10 to Windows 11, even if Microsoft said her PC was unsupported. Our producers have found that article and have added it to the show page, so you will find that later today along with a podcast of this interview at WPR.org/Larry, along with the links to the show. You will see an article from PC Magazine that says, how to upgrade to Windows 11 for free, even if your PC is unsupported. Now, it may not work for everybody, and it's certainly not advised by Microsoft, but it seems to have worked for Mary. I have an email here from Jane to follow up on our antivirus discussion. She said she had an older computer that was really running slowly, and then she says she was able to fix it by uninstalling the antivirus software she had. She wonders if that's a good idea, and I suppose it's a gentle reminder that not all antivirus softwares are created equally.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially if you have more than one antivirus protection software running on your machine at the same time, that can be very disruptive to your system. So I would ensure that there isn't something else running behind the scenes that's trying to do the same thing. Often if your antivirus is causing a real slowdown, it may be because something is enabled within the Windows antivirus protection that is kind of colliding with the software you're using.
And we are talking about PCs and Microsoft yep. operating system here, but what about antivirus for Apple, or as you mentioned with Laura and her college student with the Chromebooks?
Yeah, well, most of the larger third-party antivirus providers do make versions for Apple iOSs. So if you're using something like a Norton 360, you can get a version of that for any type of an Apple device. There are... And, you know, it used to be the general wisdom was that there are fewer viruses written for Apple iOSs. So being on an Apple iOS was inherently safer. But I think as the proliferation of iPads and iPhones and devices other than laptops are now, you know, evening out the different versions, that may not be, you know, the same prevailing wisdom as it used to be. So I think taking precautions on an Apple system is just as important as on a PC.
Now, we've been talking about some of the tariffs that have been levied against imported electronics to the U.S. and how that has become a moving target. But one of the updates we have is China evidently suspending the export of several critical rare earth elements, metals, and magnets that could choke off some supplies to components for electronics, automakers, aerospace manufacturers, semiconductor companies, and a wide range of consumer goods. In the bigger picture here, Beth, what does this mean for what we need in our new electronic world, in our digital world? And if these supply chains begin to break down, what does it look like for you and me when we try to use the machines that we need, use every day?
Yeah, I think that's where we are going to start seeing the most pain of, you know, these tariffs and the moving targets that have been created around them is the supply chain. So China provides a large percentage of the rare earth elements that are required to build the chips, processors, and semiconductors that are required to run most of the consumer electronics that we use. And that's not just your laptop or your iPhone, it's your car, it's your refrigerator, it's your microwave, it's your washing machine. There are, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find an electrical appliance right now that doesn't have some electronic component within it that requires these chips, processors, or semiconductors to function. So I think the ripples of this are going to be very widespread.
Now, part of the argument for these tariffs is that we would actually begin domestic production of some of these electronics in the United States. Do we see a timeline for when that may occur and how that might provide some relief for the cost to the consumer?
You know, honestly, I feel like that's very wishful thinking. The reason why our consumer electronics are priced the way they are currently is because a lot of these components are manufactured in companies or in countries that have, you know, very low wages. So they're produced by very low wage workers that keeps costs down. I saw a report recently that calculated the cost of an iPhone, if it were built in the U.S., would be about $3,000. So if we just up and moved manufacturing out of countries that pay very low wages and have very lax labor standards and move them into the U.S. where our workers, you know, have an expectation of higher wages, we have a minimum wage, you know, we have other thriving industries, we do have human rights protections and labor rights protections, the costs to make those goods really skyrocket.
But what about the timeline, though? If we were to begin the process of building an infrastructure for domestic production of electronics, when might we be able to see that come to the United States?
I think we've been offshoring those jobs for so long and that sector of manufacturing for so many years that it's not really a matter of retrofitting what we already have, but building new from the ground up, which will take years to accomplish. I remember back to the building of the out in the southeastern part of the state when they were building the factory for large screen televisions.
Foxconn.
Foxconn. How long building that whole environment took, the money that went into it, and that really no production actually came out of it.
Because by the time this production facility would have been up to speed, it was already somewhat obsolete.
Exactly. So building that from the ground up, takes to accomplish and also takes a healthy supply chain to manage.
Let's go to Richard next in Madison. Richard, good morning.
Yes, good morning. So just on speeding up the computer.
Yeah.
My wife has an i3 Dell, and I think I have one with an i5, and we were having really slow computers and stuff like that, and we just changed them. Went to Best Buy and they changed them to SSD hard drives. Stunning difference. They boot up within less than a minute, and running anything just makes it go super fast. So that's a possible another suggestion if one's process is good enough. But and I did have go ahead.
No, you had a question as well. Let's hear it.
Yes, I was just curious about antivirus or malware for cell phones. I had one of those strange emails pop up, text messages pop up, and I thought no, this is a scam. Mm-hmm. And 15 minutes later, it was gone. I hadn't touched it, hadn't done anything, it disappeared. It made me really nervous, and I could not figure out, and I've since been thinking, do I need to run an antivirus or malware?
Yeah, Richard, I appreciate that because I've been thinking about it too. It's just not my cell phone. It's my wallet. It is my connection to the rest of the world, including my family. My sister got an email that purported to be me a couple weeks ago, and she texted me and said that I'd been hacked. But when she looked at the email address, it was from some other country and certainly not from me. But let's start with Richard's SSD, the solid state hard drives, and what a difference that could make inside a computer that was using the old, the old rotational disk hard drives?
Yeah, really the difference is a solid state hard drive doesn't have any moving parts. Mm-hmm. It functions similar to how memory functions in your computer. So it keeps all of that data right at hand rather than it going into a slower form of storage. So it certainly can speed things up, especially with the boot up of a computer, with getting that operating system fully up and running from a cold start. Having a solid-state hard drive running your operating system, not necessarily where all your data is stored, but having an SSD running your operating system can significantly improve the speed of your computer.
And most hard drives today are solid-state hard drives, correct?
Yeah, I would say just about any newer machine that you're going to purchase is going to have a solid-state drive in it.
And how would you know if you have if you're running a solid-state drive or one of the old machine drives?
You'd probably have to look at look in the device manager to see what model of hard drive is in your machine and then look up that model number unless you wanted to open up the case and take a look at the sticker on the hard drive.
Now, as for Richard's antivirus on a smartphone, what can we do to protect everything that we have in that little device?
Yes. So I would say that it's almost more important to protect your cell phone than it is to protect your home computer, or at least as important to protect your cell phone. It's traveling with you. It's connecting to Wi-Fi networks that you don't have any control over. Access to your mobile device is really probably the easiest way for somebody to steal your information. So what I recommend is that folks look into a subscription antivirus service that covers more than one device. So if you purchase something like Norton 360 or McAfee Total Protection or one of, any number of reputable virus protection software packages, they include a number of devices that you can install on and really cover a wide range of operating systems, both PC, Apple, mobile, desktop, laptop, tablet, that type of thing. So if you have one that covers five devices, you can put it on all your devices and pay one subscription cost for the account.
Beth D'Angelo, our guest, senior IT specialist with UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. And we've still got to talk about once those computers and old electronics do die, where do they go and where can we put them that will be safe? And we'll get to that when we continue. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to WPR News. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today. Larry is back tomorrow with a look at the importance of advanced care directives. We'll speak with a family physician and retired attorney. And also tomorrow, the best way to deal with debt collectors and resolving your debt. Another attorney will be on hand. And we'll also talk about food insecurity and how communities across Wisconsin are making a difference. That's tomorrow with Larry on The Larry Mueller Show. Right now, we're talking to Beth D'Angelo, a senior IT specialist with UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. And Beth, I have a coworker here, Trina, who's been listening in, and she says she's got these old phones. I've got a stack of old phones too, and she needs to get rid of them, and she's wondering the best way, the safest way to do that.
Yeah, actually, a really handy finder on the Department of Natural Resources website for the state of Wisconsin. There's a program called eCycle Wisconsin that lists a bunch of different organizations and places where you can recycle what they call e-waste or electronics waste. So depending on where you are in the state, there are places where you can, at no cost, bring your cell phones, old laptops, tablets, anything you want to recycle.
You can't just throw these things out, can you? Or you shouldn't anyway.
No, I definitely wouldn't recommend just throwing them out. First off, there are toxins within those devices that, as they break down, get released into the environment. Those rare earth metals that we were talking about earlier that are used to run our new devices don't affect our environment very well when they're just thrown into the landfill. And also, a lot of those can be recycled from our devices and reused in newer electronics. So taking to an e-cycle organization will help kind of put that back into the supply chain.
So we're going to put that e-cycle webpage from the DNR up on our show page as well. So you'll find all these resources today after the show at WPR.org/Larry. Just click on the link of today's show with our guest, Beth D'Angelo, and you'll find the details and you can follow up with that. And it's interesting because with the recycling of these materials, it may work in some way to combat some of the what we're seeing from China, the threat to withhold some of these minerals and materials that are needed to make these devices.
I think, you know, we may see a little bit of a budding industry of, you know, organizations maybe taking in some of this e-waste and trying to collect as much of the reusable material as possible to kind of help augment the supply chain with reclaimed materials for newer manufacturing. You know, I think that may be a little kind of bright spot that we might see.
Yeah. All right, Beth. So I've still got a computer, a laptop, a tablet, or a cell phone. It still works, but I'm not interested in it anymore. I'm looking to get rid of it. What's the safest way I can move my used gear onto the next person?
Right. So, you know, if it's a cell phone and you want to resell it, if you want, you know, say sell it as a used device, I would take it into somewhere to have the data wiped from the phone to make sure that none of your data is left on it. Resetting a phone to a manufacturer's defaults doesn't actually erase the data that may have been on it previously. That can still be recoverable. And I would hate to have somebody, you know, sell their old cell phone and sell it into the wrong hands and maybe have a case of identity theft or issues after the fact. So if you're going to resell your already used hardware, I would make sure that you work with somebody who knows what they're doing about making sure your data isn't sold with it.
Because you can start from fresh, but I also see like the people recommending that you write zeros to the hard drive, which would go into the hard drive, whether it's solid state or the old fashioned hard drives, and just put a zero in every binary spot.
Yeah, there are programs that you can use that are supposed to go through and overwrite everything on your disk. You know, it may, you know, it's, I think if I were going to sell my computer, I wouldn't sell it with the hard drive in it. I would take the hard drive out. I would smash the hard drive and not allow it to leave my possession in a usable state.
20 years of IT experience, and that is smash that hard drive. As
I would take it out of the computer and I would smash it with a hammer, like I have done many times before I recycle a computer. So I don't have a big, powerful magnet to degauss it with, so a hammer works just as well.
I have an email here from Tom, and it's interesting. I don't know if you've got if you can answer this, Beth, but I'll put it out there with the time we have left. Tom wants to know what scams are associated with ChatGPT, which is one of the artificial intelligence models we've seen, and how we can safeguard against them.
Well, I think ChatGPT could be a really powerful tool for scam artists in the social engineering realm. You know, being able to build some sort of an automated bot that continues an engagement with someone in order to extract information that would allow that person to either, compromise a financial account or some of your personal data. I would just be wary of anything that doesn't sound quite right. We do have this ability in our human brain to detect something called the uncanny valley, which is when something is supposed to look real, but it's not quite right. So I would say follow your gut instincts. When something doesn't feel quite like a human being talking to you, that it probably is somebody using ChatGPT or something like that through a bot to get information from you. So, suspicion isn't always a bad thing. Electronic communication for sure.
Beth, thank you so much for this hour. Very much appreciate it.
Thanks, Lee. It was great to talk to you.
Beth D'Angelo, Senior IT Specialist with UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. So that was a little bit on artificial intelligence, but if you want to go beyond that into what's next, we're going to explore quantum computing in the next hour, and then we'll wrap up our day with a look at a little bit of Wisconsin history and the latest additions to the State Register of Historic Places with the Wisconsin State Historic Preservation Office. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to WPR News.